Hello and welcome to our thyroid assessment module. This is the place where we're going to talk in detail about thyroid lab testing and other thyroid means of assessments like physical and symptoms and temperature and all that. And I'm excited to share this with you. This is a topic that I think that a lot of practitioners misunderstand. I think there's a lot of people who don't go deep enough with thyroid assessment and then miss certain things that need to be dealt with. And I have kind of a slightly unique approach to this that I'm going to share with you in this presentation. So before we jump in and begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that all the information that I'm presenting here for you is not intended as medical information, it's not intended as medical advice, and it's not intended as diagnosis. So there can be some concern when you start to look with clients and look at their labs. And you have to be careful about the languaging because you don't want to be perceived as diagnosing them or pretending to diagnose them or going outside of your scope of practice. So the language that you use is super important. What you're doing is you're helping people to learn how to understand the clues that their body gives them in the form of labs and in the form of physical signs and symptoms. It is in no way intended to replace the care that they get from their practitioner, or is it intended to make a medical diagnosis. So when you look through this, you're going to give people ideas of how maybe their thyroid is not working as properly as it could and what kind of things they could do to look into rebalancing it. So you're educating them, not diagnosing and not treating. So that's out of the way. Let's do a quick review of thyroid. This is all covered in very big detail in our thyroid module, the thyroid mastery module, which goes into the anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, and a lot of things related to the HPAT axis, etc. We're just going to do a quick review and jump into how do you assess and how do you know if someone might be having some disruption in the functioning of their thyroid. So just a little anatomy review. You see on the left-hand side a picture of the neck. The thyroid sits there, butterfly-shaped gland that comes over the anterior part of the vertebrae and right below the voice box. The trachea is right below it. The parathyroid glands sit on top of it, and they are not really related per se to the thyroid gland. So they don't have the same function. They have different function when it comes to metabolism of bone, which we'll get to in our bone health practice class, practitioner class. So that's an anatomically where it sits. And the reason I point that out is because one of the physical signs that you may be on the lookout for is an enlargement, and actually what sometimes a visible enlargement in the neck. While you may not have within your scope of practice the ability to examine, you can actually be looking carefully and asking a person to feel in and explain to you what they feel. On the left-hand side shows the vascularization and the nerve supply that goes to the thyroid and where it sits. It's very highly innervated and very highly vascularized. Why? Because the secretions that the thyroid puts out, the thyroid hormones, in specific T3 and T4 are the ones that we talk about the most, they very much need to get right into the bloodstream, and we need to be pulling nutrients from the bloodstream to get into the thyroid to be able to make these. We go into more detail on how those thyroid hormones are made in the thyroid mastery module. How does it work physiologically or biochemically, or what triggers the thyroid? Well, the thyroid is part of what we call the HPAT axis. Some people call it the HPATG axis. And what that stands for is hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis. What this basically means is that there's a huge interrelationship between how the thyroid is functioning and the brain, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and also the level of stress that happens in the body, which is eventually given message to the adrenals, and the adrenals react. The connection between the thyroid and the adrenals is actually in the brain, in the hypothalamus, and the pituitary. The pituitary secretes the hormones, the TSH, which controls the functioning of the thyroid. It also controls the functioning of the adrenal with ACTH, and when we have low or high functioning of either one of these, we can elicit low or high functioning of the other. We can also see in this picture the connection between the thyroid and the adrenal is related to cortisol. And when cortisol gets released by the adrenals, it creates inflammatory cytokines, IL-1, IL-beta, IL-6, TNF-alpha, and those have an impact on thyroid hormones. Again, we go into this in more detail in our Thyroid Mastery module, but it actually causes a decrease in T4 and T3 conversion and a decrease in the receptor sensitivity, which is one of the biggest overlooked causes of thyroid symptomatology. So that's it for a bit of an overview and a review of that and how the thyroid interplays with the rest of the body. Well, it affects everything, right? Because the thyroid affects the metabolic rate of every single tissue in the body. So it affects brain functioning, gut functioning, gallbladder functioning, liver functioning, lipid functioning, proteins, glucose, red blood cells, hormones, bone, and cardiovascular. And what you see when you look at a list of symptoms related to thyroid, which I want you to really, really be able to, at a glance, pick out the major symptoms of hypothyroid and have that be in your brain as part of the possibility that this person is dealing with when they're telling you about their constipation or their inability to digest fats well or their brain fog or their low energy or even some of their high cholesterol and high blood pressure numbers. All of this can be controlled and can be impacted by the thyroid. So we want to be able to be on the lookout when someone comes in with their litany of health complaints to be able to assess where that's coming from and if potentially it's related to thyroid function. So let's take a look at the types of thyroid dysfunction that we need to be on the lookout for. Well, we have hypothyroidism, which is underfunctioning thyroid. We have hyperthyroidism. We have autoimmune thyroid condition. There's Graves and there's Hashimoto's. Graves is more of a hyperthyroid related to autoimmune autoantibodies, and Hashimoto's is more of a hypo, although in the early stages of Hashimoto's, it is important for you to know that in the early stages of Hashimoto's, people can be fluctuating between hyper and hypo, or actually present as if they're hyper when they're going into an autoimmune hypo. There's also these subclinical thyroid conditions, and these are the ones that are most often overlooked, and I want to teach you how to be on the lookout for these, because a lot of folks go to their doctors, and they say, you know, I've been reading a lot about this stuff, and I think I have some problems with my thyroid, because I'm constipated, my skin is dry, my hair is flaky, it's falling out, I have low energy, my cholesterol's high, and I've read that those can be symptoms of thyroid, and the doctor goes ahead and tests, and does, my opinion, a very inferior test, because they don't test everything, and we'll go through what a complete test should look like. But they come back and say, no, your thyroid looks fine. And even sometimes if they do a complete test, the thyroid could come back fine. And what they're missing is some of these subclinical thyroid conditions, like binding protein problems, either too much or too little of the protein that actually binds the thyroid hormone as it travels around and doesn't allow enough of it to be released and be free in the circulation. There's thyroid receptor resistance, which is a very rampant problem. And you see it very commonly when somebody has perfectly fine thyroid numbers, but they're loaded with symptoms. And it's because the cells have become resistant to the thyroid hormone, similar to the way that cells can become insulin resistant. And we know that as an issue. We are also a lot more in the literature talking about these days, estrogen resistance, progesterone resistance, leptin resistance. So it's very possible and very common for the cells to get worn out and not be actively able to receive the hormone signals, even if the numbers in the blood look perfectly normal. And then we have Wilson's temperature syndrome, which appears in some cases to look like thyroid receptor resistance, where the blood tests are either normal or what we're seeing is an imbalance between T4 and T3. And we really assess that one with temperature. And we'll go more into the assessment in a bit. And the other type of thyroid dysfunction is actually cancer. And thyroid cancer is in the most cases, if treated early enough, treated by removal or radiation of the thyroid, and most people can get rid of it, but it really causes a lot of issues in later life. So it's not like, oh, well, you know, I can get thyroid cancer and I'll be fine. I'm not going to die. Maybe not, but you could have a lot of trouble with getting your hormones in balance and having interactions with the other hormone and gland systems in the body. So let's look at some of the patterns. If you've ever read Dr. Datis Karazian's book, it's called Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms When My Lab Tests Are Normal? He actually identifies, I think it's 22 different patterns. These are the main patterns, and then some of the other patterns are sub-patterns within that. And I would recommend that book as an additional reading. That book has a lot of great information about really going even deeper to fine-tune your analysis for someone. We have primary hypothyroid. What does that mean? Well, it means basically that the thyroid itself is just not secreting enough thyroid hormone. And there can be any number of issues that are related there. It could be that you don't have enough iodine in the diet. It could be that there's been damage to the thyroid itself. It could be that you don't have other nutrients that are needed for the thyroid to make the thyroid. Pituitary and hypothalamic hypothyroid are when the thyroid's functioning perfectly fine. It's just that the pituitary is either over or under stimulating it. And that could be because of the pituitary has got a problem or because the hypothalamus, which tells the pituitary, hey, wake up, go stimulate the thyroid, may not be working or may be overworking. A lot of these have to do with neurotransmitters, like excesses and deficiencies of serotonin and dopamine in particular. Autoimmune thyroiditis. Well, what's that? Well, that's when we're making antibodies to attack it. The two main ones in that regard, the main diseases, quote unquote, in that regard are Hashimoto's and Graves. But a person can have autoantibodies, antibodies attacking the thyroid without being in a clinical symptom situation. So we don't really call them Hashimoto's person or a Graves person when they don't actually have symptoms. At least medicine, Western medicine doesn't. And also the ranges. We'll talk about optimal ranges in a little bit when we look at labs. Like someone can have a very low level of antibodies and medicine just ignores it. And in my opinion, that's not wise because there's a lot of things that can be done to prevent that situation from getting worse and to prevent the damage that the thyroid will undergo and eventually have symptoms. Wouldn't you like to catch a situation where the body's attacking the thyroid, there's antibodies, but there's no symptoms, and help that person to get their immune system under control so they're not at risk? Then we have two conversion situations. As a review, we have T4, which is the inactive form, the storage form, but it's the one that's predominantly controlled and secreted by the thyroid. And then we get that converted to T3, usually at peripheral tissue. Very little of it is actually done in the thyroid. So a thyroid conversion problem, under or over, is generally not a problem with the thyroid. It's a problem somewhere else. So the T4 needs to get secreted, converted to T3, and we can underconvert, which means that there's not enough T3 being made for the amount of T4, or we can overconvert, which means that we have too much. Underconversion, symptomatology-wise, looks kind of like hypothyroidism because there's not enough T3 to be stimulating the cells, and therefore we have symptoms that happen when there's not enough thyroid, even though there's enough thyroid hormone being secreted. Overconversion can look like hyperthyroidism, so it might be misdiagnosed as a Graves condition or a viral hyperthyroidism when in fact it's just an overconversion. And we'll look at each of these patterns in a little bit more detail and review them, but they were reviewed in detail in the Thyroid Mastery module. Then we have increased thyroid binding globulin and decreased thyroid binding globulin. And basically, thyroid binding globulin is a protein that carries the thyroid around to the cells. So it takes it from the thyroid or from wherever it's getting converted. The conversion from T4 to T3 happens primarily in the liver and the gut. So we take that T3 and deliver it to the cells via the thyroid binding globulin. If we have too much thyroid binding globulin, the amount of thyroid hormone that's going to be available for active use at the tissue level is going to be lower. That often happens when we have women who are on birth control pills or taking exogenous estrogen. It causes an increase in the thyroid binding globulin. Decreased thyroid binding globulin means that there is less of the thyroid binding globulin and more of the free component of the hormone. And what that means is that you got more thyroid hormone hitting the tissues, hitting the GI tract, hitting the skin, hitting the brain, and all the other places that the thyroid hormone affects. And what that could look like is hyperthyroid, too much hormone because there's too much free. And we're going to look at the measurements of these things and how you can look at the ratio between the free and the bound form of the hormone to be able to tell if this is possibly an issue happening with someone. And then finally, we have thyroid receptor resistance. And that's basically where everything seems to be working fine. The numbers all look good. There's the right amount of T3. There's the right amount of free T3, but we're still seeing symptoms. And that's generally because of some situations that are happening. And I'll review with you what the causes of each of these kinds of conditions are later. And we go through that in detail in the Thyroid Mastery. So I just want to reiterate that you could see that the typical medical approach of just measuring TSH and saying, well, it's either high or low, the person's either normal, they're hypothyroid or hyperthyroid, is actually failing to catch the majority of the situations here. That can find problems with primary hypothyroidism. If the thyroid isn't producing enough, the TSH would be too high. Or it can pick up situations with the pituitary, where it's just not producing enough or producing too much TSH, but it's really missing the boat on all the other possibilities of these over 20 different patterns of thyroid imbalance. So let's look at thyroid assessment. What do we do to assess the thyroid? Well, it's not just labs, right? There's a whole bunch of things that go in. I've been talking over the last few minutes about the signs and symptoms. Well, we have a signs and symptoms questionnaire, and you'll have a copy of that on the webpage where you're watching this video. You can use that questionnaire and send it to your clients or ask them the questions in a face-to-face or on the phone or on Skype type of a history-taking appointment. Right? That's one way. The other way is history and medication use. There's certain conditions that predispose people to thyroid problems, and there's certain conditions that will come from thyroid problems. And the medications are certain medications that interfere with the functioning, and I'll show you what those are. We can look at physical exam findings. And even if you're not licensed to do a physical exam on a person, you can actually give your clients a form to look at so they can either examine their body or have a family member or friend examine their body and fill out the form. Then we have measurement of temperature. There's two different measures of temperature, and I actually like to combine the two. The Broda Barnes, who wrote Hypothyroid, The Unsuspecting Illness, one of the very first ever books on thyroid conditions, he did that back in, I think, the 1950s, and he identified that, you know, lab testing wasn't the best way to assess for thyroid function, that body temperature was, because when the thyroid is low, you're going to see very sluggish, low body temperature. When it's high, you're going to see elevated temperature. And he had people measure what is called the basal body temperature first thing in the morning versus Dr. Wilson, Dennis Wilson. He's more recently written books and teaches classes in measuring the thyroid hormone, the temperature throughout the day and getting an average. So we'll look at some of the charts that I've created for you to use for that. And then finally, good old labs. And it's not just labs, thyroid labs. It's actually labs related to thyroid function as well that you can use, and I'll show you what some of those are. So we have a scorecard questionnaire. There's a link to it there. On the slide is also the questionnaire link itself will be on the page where you're watching this video. And here's some symptoms. These are not all of the symptoms there, but here's are some of the symptoms you're going to look at. And I want you to start to really look at these symptoms and relate this to thyroid. When you start to hear somebody who says, my energy's low, I can't get out of bed in the morning, I keep gaining weight, I can't lose the weight even though I'm going lower in my calories, my skin is dry, my digestion's sluggish, my blood pressure's low, my hair is getting thin, maybe it's even falling out, I feel cold when other people are hot, my hands and feet get cold. I feel chilled. I'm constipated. I get infections. My voice is starting to get hoarse. I get ringing in the ears, puffy eyes, you know, loss of libido. That can be a lot of things. Joint aches can be a lot of things. Headaches, dizziness, insomnia, depression, mental dullness, and elevated cholesterol. It's when you, not when you see one or two or even three of these symptoms, but when you start to see a pattern where there's several or many of these symptoms happening, you want to start to look at and evaluate their thyroid function. Excess thyroid. We don't see this as much, quite frankly, but you might be seeing it. You might see this in response to somebody who goes on a particular medication or is over-medicated on their thyroid medication, and also in autoimmune conditions. Not as common, but definitely possible. Hot. Appetite is increased. They keep losing weight. And sometimes people get a viral thyroid condition, excess thyroid, an autoimmune or the body's attacking its thyroid temporarily due to a viral infection. And suddenly they start to lose weight. You know, anybody that starts to lose weight without trying, you really want to evaluate what's going on. Is it a thyroid issue? Is it cancer? Is it some sort of deep hidden infection? When they get tired at the end of the day, but they're wired all day long, and then they can't fall asleep at night because they're too wired. Hands might tremble. They may get heart palpitations, irregular heartbeat. Bowel movements are increased, like they're, you know, kind of an irritable bowel. Periods sometimes go away. They get short of breath. Chest pain, hair loss, and muscle weakness. So again, you're starting to just hear these things when you're starting to talk to people. And the more you study this and the more you do it, the easier it's going to be for you to just pick these kinds of things out and say, you know what, I better assess and ask them about their thyroid gland. Here's the thing though. A lot of times there's cross symptomatology between two different areas. And in this particular case, hypothyroidism can present similarly to adrenal fatigue. So I'd like you to be able to assess this and be able to differentiate them. Now, in the Thyroid Mastery module, there's a long chart, you know, a several page long chart that you can use to go through. This is a summary of the most important of those signs for differentiation, but I recommend that you review that in the Thyroid Mastery module. So body temperature in hypothyroid generally tends to be low, and it's consistently low. Whereas in hypoadrenal, it tends to get low, but it also fluctuates. Sometimes it might be higher. You know, somebody says, well, I have higher temperature in the morning than at night, or, you know, that's kind of unusual. You want to be looking for those, the fluctuating low temperature. In hypothyroid, they can be sluggish pretty much all the time. Depending on where they are in adrenal stage, they can be wired and tired all within the same day. In the hypothyroid, they have a lot of hard time losing fat. In hypoadrenal, they have a difficult time gaining muscle. Blood pressure tends to be normal to high in hypo and low to normal in hypoadrenal, but it could vary. I mean, in some stages of thyroid condition, you can actually have low blood pressure. Total cholesterol does tend to be high in hypothyroid, and that's where you may see somebody who's difficulty gaining weight and they're very fatigued and they have high cholesterol, even though their diet's pretty darn good. That's a sign of low thyroid function. Not meaning necessarily low thyroid itself, right? Remember all those different patterns. With adrenal, it tends to be lower. Facial color tends to be more red versus pale in adrenal. With thyroid, sweat tends to be scanty or none, where hypoadrenal is profuse. A lot of people will say, you know, I just have to think about exercise and I sweat. That's often a sign of adrenal insufficiency. As some people say, I exercise like crazy and I can't sweat. That could be a sign of hypothyroid. Remember, though, that no one of these symptoms is in and of itself a differentiator, and it's really looking at the big picture. We're looking for root cause, guys. The bowels in hypothyroid tend to be sluggish and people tend towards constipation, whereas in hypoadrenal, maybe they're sometimes constipated, but they might be sometimes irritated and kind of an IBS type of a situation. So those are some of the differentiators. I encourage you to go look in the Thyroid Mastery and really master those, or actually print them out, keep them handy. So when you're talking to somebody and you're going through their history, you can help yourself to learn and to be able to differentiate these better. This is a whole list of medications affecting the thyroid. We'll have that list on the page for you. Again, this is one of those charts to print out. We have a more detailed one that we have on the page, and it's got all the names of different medications. And it's a good idea, as you have talked to people, is to ask them if they're on any medications that might be contributing to their symptoms that relate to thyroid. There are a whole bunch of physical exam signs that you can you can look for. And here's the thing. You may not be able to do a particular exam on a person, but you can ask them to do. And I'll show you a few of the self-assessment signs that you can show them as well. But if you do, and some of these things you can notice if you see them in your office or if you see them across Skype or Zoom or whatever kind of calls you may do with people. So temperature, real easy. We'll go into more detail about that. Below 98 is definitely an issue. Achilles reflex. If you do reflexes, they tend to have a sluggish Achilles reflex in a hypothyroid situation. They tend to have tenderness, and this is a kinesiologic type sign, between the second and third ribs right near the sternum. That's, again, not specific to thyroid, but if they have a bunch of these, you can kind of start to guess that this may be a problem. Edema around the calf bone, tenderness around the rib margins, dry, thin hair, cracked nails, dry, flaky skin, hives, lesions of roughness on their shins, blister-like bumps on the face. These are all possible signs of thyroid problems. So we want to make sure that you're looking more carefully when you see these things. They can have a mass in the neck if the thyroid is inflamed or if there's some nodules on it. They can have low blood pressure, but they can also have high blood pressure. Pulse can be low, face or high, depending on what stage of thyroid imbalance they're at. This is a big one. The outer third of the eyebrows tend to fall out when people have been hypothyroid for a while. So if you see somebody and they have thick eyebrows and they just end like two-thirds of the way across, that's a clear sign that there may be a thyroid problem. In some cases, the eyes protrude and the eyelids retract and they look like this bug eye, and they can have other signs that look like that. They can have tremors and shakiness if they're hyperthyroid. Their speak may be shaky or slow or sluggish, and difficulty finding their words, hoarseness in the voice, and then swelling in the hands and feet. So these are just some things. Again, you know, I like to print out charts like this and just keep myself a little binder of things that help me to differentiate what's going on with people when I'm looking for root cause. So here's a few of the things you can actually let them do, ask them to do. You can have them look for the goose flesh at the back of the arms and thighs. That could also be related to fatty acid imbalance or vitamin A or E imbalance. But if you put, like I said, a bunch of these together, you can find that that points to having some sort of problem with thyroid. Scalp edges on the tongue and teeth marks, and that can be indicative of a problem with the thyroid. They can just feel and let you know, do they have cold hands and feet? Do they have edema around their eyes? You know, that puffiness underneath their eyes, dry skin, the loss of the outer third of eyebrow, coarse dry hair, and mixed edema, which is that swelling. If you look at the legs in the right-hand side, the bottom picture, it's a swelling in the bottom parts of the ankles where you don't even see the ankle bones, but it's not a pitting edema where you press it in and it stays, it pops right out, or stays in, it pops right out. So it's different kind of edema called mixed edema. And you can have them just look at themselves if you want to go that far. Thyroid self-exam signs for hyper. The eyes kind of get buggy. You see that picture in the upper right. Again, the scalloped marks. You could see the goiter in the neck. That's real obvious. It's not always going to be quite that obvious. And then one side pitting edema would be more of a sign of an excess thyroid function. Let's look at body temperature. I said there's two different ways of measuring it. There's the basal body temperature from Broda Barnes. And what you're going to do is have them keep a thermometer by their bedside. And it's really good if it's what's called a basal thermometer, where it doesn't go all the way up. It's not a fever thermometer that goes all the way up to 106. This may only go up to 100. It may go from like 96 to 100 or 101. And so you've got wider margins. This is a picture of a newer type of thermometer over the last 5 years. years or so that doesn't have mercury. It's another kind of metal. They're fatter than the old mercury thermometers. There's also digital. I'm not as big a fan of the digitals because I find that they're not quite as accurate and repeatable, but there's certainly something to do. But if you're going for that basal body temperature, like Berta Barnes gives, and he talks about the range being quite narrow, it really is a good idea to have a basal body temperature so you can see like small changes and small gradations. The average body temperature is done with Wilson's, where he'll go, you start about 3 hours after you get up. You want to be about 3 hours away from meals, and every 3 hours, basically, you measure and you do it for 3 days. So I call it the rule of threes, and his little ebook there is really a good book for helping you to look at what he's looking for, but it's basically you're mapping that out and looking to see what their average is over those 3 days. And it really should be 98.6. So right about 98.6. So a little bit below is fine. A little bit above is fine, but you don't want to go too much below or above. Oftentimes when you're working with people with problems with their thyroid, hypothyroid, you're going to see them in the 96s and 97s quite often. And as you work with them, this is a really nice way for you to help to see if what you're doing is making a difference, because over the course of a month or two or three, you can start to see changes in that body temperature. And it's going to reflect in the body temperature before it reflects in the blood. Plus, it's a lot cheaper to reflect in the blood, in the temperature. You can buy a thermometer for $10 and then just keep testing. So it's a good it's a good tool to teach people. And I've given you a chart where you can use to monitor. And this combines both the basal body temperature and also the throughout the day average. And I do it for 3 days, so you could see the basal. I have the awakening, which would be the basal, and then you've got the time one, time two, time three, and I have it for 3 days, so you can actually figure out people's average. When you figure out the average, if you're looking at the Wilson's approach, you eliminate the first one. So you're basically going to have the standalone basal temperature, which is upon awakening, and then what you're going to have is those three times averaged out on each day, and then across the 3 days to get a sense of if there's an issue with the thyroid. And it's a really nice monitoring tool. The caution is, if you're working with women who are premenopausal, they're still having menstrual cycles, you want to avoid the only do it on the first 10 days of the cycle, because you want to avoid the time from ovulation to the end of the cycle, because the temperature does tend to go up about half a degree during that time. Okay, so that's that. Broda Barnes talks about the basal body temperature being, you know, somewhere in the area of 97.7 to 98.2 as being a reasonable basal body temperature, because it does tend to be lower first thing in the morning. Whereas the Wilson's, when you're averaging it throughout the day, really looking at over 98 for sure, and, you know, in the area of 98.6, as close to that as possible. So what else? Well, we have thyroid, and I've given you a chart here of the thyroid lab ranges, and I've given you the lab ranges and what we consider the ideal range. The ideal range for TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, is hotly debated, and there's a lot of different research that is telling you what it should be. According to some of the labs, they still have it as high as 5.7, although what I see in the range is usually like 0.3 to 4.7 or 4.5. They've come down. But the endocrinology associations even have been saying for many, many years, and it's well documented, that it should never go above 3. And if you look at some of the more recent doctors that are talking about your thyroid, I think Karazian still talks about it being 1.5 to 3. And then Dr. Brownstein, he talks about it between like 1 and 2 being ideal. So, you know, use it with a grain of salt. Watch where they're at. See how they feel. I tend to like to see it around 2, a little bit below, a little bit above. But, you know, once it gets 3 or above, I'm starting to be concerned that there may be an issue. But like I said, there's so many other factors, and nobody's really agreeing these days on what that number exactly should be. Definitely below 3 for sure. Then we have the total T4. And it might be listed as total thyroxine. And the lab range is 4.5 to 12.5. The ideal range is 6 to 12. And that's the total amount of T4 the thyroid has produced. So that gives us a sense of whether the thyroid is functioning optimally. Doesn't give us any sense of all the other aspects we talked about before with the thyroid binding globulin and the T3 and the conversion and the receptors. So then we look at the total T4. Well, T4 is going to be converted to T3. So that's the total amount that the body has. What we want to look at is how much of that is free T4 and free T3. And the thing is that it's usually a very tiny amount. But what we want to see is that the percentage of T3, free T3 related to the total T3 is similar to the percentage of free T4 related to total T4. These are really important numbers, and I'm going to show you a chart where you can lay this out when you get the numbers. So you may have, let's just give you an example. Let's just say the total T4 is 6. It's within the ideal range. It's a low end of the ideal range. And let's just say the total T3 is 180. That's at the very top of the range. What that says to me, that probably more of the T4 is getting converted to T3 than should be. And vice versa. Let's just say we have a total T4 of 12 and a total T3 of 100. It says to me that probably not enough of that T4 is being converted to T3. So I want you to be more sleuths, more detectives, much more attuned to how to look at these numbers, not as absolute numbers within the range, but also how do you look at them in relationship to each other? And this is a really important key component. So when you look at free T4 and free T3, the same situation occurs. So if we look at the total T4 is at the top end of the range and the free T4 is at the low end, we're thinking that maybe we have what? Too much thyroid binding globulin and not enough of it's being converted. And the same thing with the T3. So you're looking at ratios between total T4, free T4, total T3, free T3, but also the ratio between the T4s and the T3s. So again, if you've got a situation, even if the numbers are in the normal range, but you've got free T4 at, say, the ideal range is 1 to 1.5. Let's just say free T4 is at 1.3 and free T3 is at 3. Probably a little bit of an underconversion. And you want to nip those things in the bud if you're seeing them so you can look at, well, why is there a little bit of an underconversion? And let's help this person to actually adequately convert from their T4 to T3 and also from their bound hormones to their free hormones. So it's really a trick, and I'll show you a little tool that I found that I'm very grateful to have found to be able to use that. And we've given you a copy of that on the site and also in your master tracker. Thyroid binding globulin, we don't usually measure it, but the thyroglobulin antibodies, antithyroglobulin, super important, as is thyroid peroxidase. I believe that anybody with any symptoms of fatigue or even glimmers of hypothyroidism should have those two measured. And a lot of times we see them long before we actually see changes in the rest of the lab. So we want to look at those numbers. Now, in the lab, they say that between 0 and 1 for thyroglobulin is normal. And that's fine because that's what the ideal range is too. But some of the labs will actually allow for more thyroglobulin than that. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like how many bullets do you want shooting at your house? Really none. So as close to 0 as you can get, the better. With thyroid peroxidase, they go all the way up to 31. And I believe, again, it should be as low as possible. 0 to 2 would be ideal. And if somebody has, you know, up to 10, I'm not considering it like a major problem. I'm considering it a warning sign, you know, when it stays in the single digits. But once it gets in the teens and 20s and 30s, we want to make sure that we're working on helping this person to balance their immune system. I've seen people who started out with those numbers in the hundreds and sometimes in the thousands and get them down by applying the protocols that I'm teaching you, get them down into the 20s, the teens, and the single digits. I've never seen anybody with a 0. It would be really nice. We're probably going to see small numbers of these antibodies in the body just because there's constant, you know, breakdown, repair of the gland, and that's what might be causing a problem with it. Those are the antibodies. There's another one called TSI, which we don't measure that much, thyroid stimulating immunoglobulin. And that basically is often elevated in Graves' disease. It's actually an antibody against the thyroid stimulating hormone. Thyroid binding globulin, we don't normally measure. Every now and then, if you're really confused, you might ask somebody to measure it. You might see an endocrinologist measure it in your client. So I wanted to give you that in the ranges, but that's basically how much of that protein is there. Reverse T3, we see that measured a fair amount, but here's the thing with reverse T3. It's not the absolute amount that's important. It's the amount in relationship to the free T3. That's really important. And that ratio should be 20 or more. So the T3 to reverse T3 should be 20 or more. And a lot of times I see it in the teens and single digits. And that's usually because the body's producing more reverse T3 than free T3. So T3 uptake and free thyroxine index, I generally don't even bother looking at. They are not actually measurements. They are actually calculations. And I don't think they're that good because T3 uptake is like, okay, it should be related to how much T3 is there. But when I compare, a lot of times that T3 uptake is very normal and the T3 is not, the free T3 or the total. So I don't use them very much. They're usually included for free on the labs, the thyroid labs, just because they don't cost anything. It's just a little calculation. It's not actually a measurement. And the same thing with free thyroxine index. Both of those are supposed to give us an estimate of free thyroxine, which is T4, and the T3. And I don't think they work all that well. Just my opinion and my experience. Here's, again, what's in the complete thyroid panel, what those numbers should be, some alternate names for them. So TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. Total T4 might be listed on the lab as thyroxine. So sometimes people get confused when they're looking at their labs and they ask for T4 and they see thyroxine. T3 is often listed as triiodothyronine. So you just be aware when you're getting their labs back. Again, this is showing you the ranges. It's a little easier to read than the chart before, whichever you like better. Okay. But it's really, really important that the ratio of T3 to reverse T3 be at least 20. Okay. And you can calculate that. There's a calculator and we have the link to that on your page. We'll go ahead and end part one right now and here. And then in part two, we'll pick up with more detailed information about how do you analyze and put it together once you've got all these data points, and also a little bit about more depth on each of the different lab tests. So this is Dr. Rita Marie. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you on the next section.